Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Will the internet become a land of the unliving? Today on Advanced. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Peter, and you are joining us today, Saturday, April 18th, 2026, for day two of our technology article for the month of April. It is called Headless Browsing. What if someday there are no real humans using the internet? A thoughtful and provocative idea here, a memorable image, headless browsing, and we will unpack the rest of this article today. We began yesterday by learning about a conspiracy theory, a so-called conspiracy theory, which is the dead internet theory, the idea that most of the content that we encounter online is not produced by human beings, but by machines, by artificial intelligence or some form of bot, chat bot, this bot, that bot. And so this theory, it's called a conspiracy theory, but it's kind of hard to really consider it a conspiracy theory. A conspiracy theory usually implies a bunch of humans, a small bunch of humans that get together to create some kind of massive event or change of some kind, usually for the worse. But this is, this whole idea of headless browsing is more of a sort of thing that's just happening, not controlled by a small group of people. So, you know, it's kind of sort of in the realm of conspiracy theory, but it's not maybe exhibit A. It's not a prime example of a conspiracy theory. But we talked about browsers and how traditional browsers, you know, when you go on Google Chrome or Safari or Internet Explorer or good old Firefox, when you interact with the internet, you use a browser, and most browsers have what's known as GUI, Graphical User Interface, and that's how you interact with the internet, with the websites. You have buttons and scroll bars and tabs, and you move your mouse cursor around the screen to access what you want and interact with it that way. But a so-called headless browser is a browser that only links a machine to another machine. It enables a computer to access a website instead of a human being, and so it is much simpler. It doesn't have all the buttons and tabs and scroll bars, and that's what is meant by headless browsing. So we'll continue to talk about that today. We'll read through the article and cover the important English in it so that you can also be growing in your confidence in English during this time. And when I say we, of course, I do mean myself and my co-panelist. Returning for day two of our article, please welcome back Simon. Hello, Simon.
Hi, Peter. I do think there's a strong conspiracy element here involving people.
Ah, you do? Well, yeah. That's good, because I wanted to just briefly talk about what do you think is the appeal of conspiracy theories generally? Why
well,
do they keep coming up?
In this case, I can tell you where I could see the conspiracy. I mean, I think it's because, you know, sometimes we're disappointed with our own performance and level of accomplishment. And we sort of suspect that that's because we are participating in a game that is not really fair.
Mm.
It's sort of rigged.
Our whole waking hours.
For excuses, you know, things that are being manipulated. But also, you know, there's sort of, I think it just kind of reflects on the way people like to do things.
Mm.
Like we would like to be part of a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we like to believe there are conspiracies.
Right. We want to be part of the inner circle,
I mean,
so to speak.
Here the one I can see as being sort of the obvious guess is very closely related to the idea of bots, which, you know, are closely associated with headless browsing. And I do that because I have had some interaction with e-learning systems over the years.
Mm.
There's different ways you could use an e-learning system. For me, I tend to like interacting with people. So if I produce course content, it's basically for a course that has people sitting in a room with me.
Mm.
But then sometimes, it's good to sort of create a place to deposit or store all of that stuff online. So people from the class can go and look through the catalog or find what is going on in class today or whatever. Mm. I tend to use the internet that way in relation to e-learning systems. So I'm not so concerned with clicks, how many clicks there are. Mm-hmm. But I've worked in conjunction with groups and organizations for which the click was the only thing that mattered. Mm. So they just wanted huge numbers of clicks.
Right, right.
And in particular, they don't want people coming back with like a simple counter, so it's like one person visits 100 times. Mm-hmm, right. They want unique visits. And one of the easiest ways to do this, of course, is to just get a botnet to log on to your website from all over the place and up your engagement and your accounts. People do this kind of thing with, you know, Instagram, their social media.
Sure, sure.
There's particularly, there's a lot of rumors about Twitter having huge numbers of fake accounts that are egging people on, et cetera. So I think there could well be some basis to this idea that there are bots that are browsing the internet, effectively clicking on things and visiting websites.
Right, right.
That might not otherwise be visited.
Yes, and you've anticipated, I think, a key aspect of the article that we're going to get into today. And so thanks for sort of giving us a short form of that up front. Let us now turn to our article and read more about the what it means, this rise in headless browsing of machines talking to machines on the internet rather than people talking to machines. We'll do two readings today, so again, open up your magazine if it isn't already, to April 18th, Headless Browsing, and let's go into our first reading.
A tool to help humans. Historically, headless browsers have been tools for web developers. Because every GUI element on a web page has corresponding code, an automated program designed to help find errors on a website running through a headless browser can interact with that website just like a person would, but much faster. The traditional benefit of headless browsers is that websites become more stable and reliable because headless browsing allows errors to be found relatively quickly. Headless browsers are now being employed by new users who don't have heads at all. Increasingly, artificial intelligence systems are the primary users. AI browsers, such as Perplexity's Comet, use headless browsing to scan websites to carry out your prompts quickly. For example, when you prompt an AI browser for a list of the capitals of the 50 US states, the browser's AI will read the content of numerous websites via headless browsing to quickly retrieve the answer. But headless browsing goes beyond letting AI scan a website to retrieve information. As artificial intelligence systems evolve into becoming personal assistants, known as AI agents, headless browsing is also being utilized to interact with websites on your behalf, performing tasks like clicking links, checking boxes, or even adding items to your shopping cart.
All right, so tool to help humans, the subhead of our first section here, and it begins historically, headless browsers have been tools for web developers. Simon, how have they been tools for web developers?
Well, Peter, it seems that when you have a web page that is sort of the traditional browser we were talking about yesterday, which looks like sort of every other computer program you use on your computer, so think Google Chrome or Safari or Firefox, something like that. Basically, all of them have these GUIs. You mentioned that during your introduction, the graphic user interface, which basically lets people interact with the computer in a way people can understand what's going on. And so for each of those things, there's sort of a computer code that's driving the whole thing. And all of those things can fail effectively. So they have an automated program that kind of goes through and clicks all the things and checks all the things systematically and, you know, sees if something goes wrong, I guess.
And that's the headless browser. That's how headless browsers were originally developed, and what they were used for was to access a web page instead of using the graphical user interface, the GUI elements, to just speak to the web page through its corresponding code. Corresponding meaning having similar qualities or a similar size or position to something. This code that would correspond to the GUI elements that a human would use to interact with the page, but the headless browser doesn't need the GUI elements. It just responds to the code. And so it can, like Simon was saying, it is designed to help find errors on a website because it can interact with the website just like a person would, but much faster because it doesn't need to use the GUI elements and click and move the cursor around and such. It just goes straight to the code.
More systematically, too. You know, you can sort of see a more situation.
Thoroughly, you mean?
Well, I mean, when's the last time you went onto the Studio Classroom webpage and clicked on the, for example, events link or the contact us link, right? Like, we just don't do it very often. And so, you know, we would click on the things that appeal to us on a website and ignore the things that are maybe more niche or specialized. And so to go through everything systematically, to click on every single link, it seems it would be better to not be thinking too much.
Yes, yes. Right? No, and that's a good illustration of how the benefit of the headless browser is that it can check and so-called click on every single link or location on the website in order to test it, in order to catch any errors, because it can do it so much faster by just reading the code directly and interacting with the web page like that. And the paragraph goes on to say here that the traditional benefit of headless browsers is that websites become more stable, more reliable, because headless browsing allows errors to be found relatively quickly. So headless browsers is not something that just sort of arose out of all this artificial intelligence stuff and bots being used online. These were specifically developed by humans to help humans, design better web pages, more stable and reliable web pages. And the headless browser was basically just a tool to check for errors, a troubleshooter, because it could go through the entire web page so much more quickly than a human could, and like Simon said, so much more thoroughly. So it could just do the whole page instead of having to go one at a time or just to the interesting links, as it were.
I bet our users have used these without even realizing it.
Really?
Like if people have set up a blog, or usually when people build a web page for themselves or whatever, they use like a service, like a platform, right?
Mm, yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I bet this is the sort of thing that's integrated into those services. You know, like when you put a link on your blog or whatever, I bet there's sort of things going on in the background that you don't even realize are going on.
Sure, sure. There's certainly all that code that is coming into play, and possibly even a small form of headless browsing takes place in order to check to make sure everything's okay, that the code is correct and such. But in our next paragraph, then, it goes on to say that headless browsers are, this is maybe my favorite line in the whole article, headless browsers are now being employed by new users who don't have heads at all. So we have a situation where headless browsers are basically being used by headless users. And that's the article's way of saying that artificial intelligence systems are more and more, they are the primary users of headless browsers rather than the humans who originally developed and used the headless browsers. And it gives the example, AI browsers such as Perplexity's Comet use headless browsing to scan websites to carry out your prompts quickly. To scan means to look quickly for something without going into too much detail, because you're just looking for a very specific thing or a few very specific things. And then it even gives an example in the next line there. Simon, what is the example they give?
Well, I assume you're talking about the U.S. state capitals here.
Yeah, right, exactly.
That, you know, is something I am not super familiar with this, you know, as a Canadian. So I would definitely use this headless browser approach to finding out what they are.
Sure.
But basically, you know, if you want to know what the list of capitals are for all the states, there's 50 of them, so there's quite a list, right? What you could do is you would basically ask the AI, and the AI would use the headless browser to find out by checking, it says here, multiple websites. So presumably that's it finding out the answer, but then verifying that the answer is commonly agreed on.
Right, exactly. It would first retrieve the answer, retrieve meaning to get back information that has been stored somewhere in a computer, to retrieve the information and then verify it, like Simon was saying, make sure it's correct. But bear in mind, see, what is happening there is that you are not accessing these multiple websites yourself. You are having an AI browser, again, a headless user, interact with a headless browser in order to get that list of the 50 U.S. state capitals. And that's the point of the next paragraph here. Headless browsing goes beyond letting AI scan a website to retrieve information. As AI systems evolve into becoming personal assistants, known as AI agents, headless browsing is also being utilized, just means being used, to interact with websites on your behalf, performing tasks like what?
Well, it says clicking links, checking boxes, or even adding items to your shopping cart. I mean, we've actually done separate articles on agentic AI.
Yes, AI agents.
So it's basically the shift is the AI stops being a chatbot kind of browser and starts being like a digital coworker.
Right.
So you say, you know, find me this product. I need it by Thursday. And it goes online and browses different, you know, shopping platforms and orders the cheapest one that can ship it there by Thursday.
Right, right. Whereas in the past, you would have done that, or if you had an assistant, the assistant would have done that. And now, this little AI agent
doesn't. But it certainly couldn't have
done
the actual shopping process. Like, it could refer you to the links.
Yeah.
Like, you can buy it on Amazon, you can buy it on Shopee, but it wouldn't have actually done the shopping, entered your address, put in the credit card information, all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
Which is what it can sort of do now.
Right, right, until now.
Yeah.
So let's now go on to our next section and sort of pull these threads all together and see what the ultimate impact or impacts of headless browsing could be. Again, headless browsers and headless users, I think we should also say, what the ultimate result of all this could be if it continues the way it's been going lately. Let's go into our second reading now.
The catch. When AI agents visit a website, the website often has no way to tell that it's an AI and not a human being. That's terrible news for companies, which rely on web advertising to pay the bills. Advertisers sell things to human beings, and if advertisers can no longer trust whether a website knows precisely how many people are visiting it, they likely aren't going to spend their limited ad dollars on that site. If headless browsing does become the norm, it also means that the dead internet theory could take on an expanded meaning. No longer would the phrase signify only an internet where human beings do not make the majority of the content, but where the majority of the browsing is no longer done by humans.
All right, so nice bit of vocab right there in our subhead, the catch. The catch, and in this case, we're not talking about the catch like you catch an object that someone throws to you. A, you know, sports player catches a ball of some sort. In this case, catch means a hidden problem or difficulty. Sometimes you'll hear it in the movies. One character will make a very attractive offer, financial offer often, sometimes, to another character, and the first character will say, huh, this sounds great. What's the catch? Because it sounds too good to be true. It sounds like there's some extra thing I have to do to get to reap this benefit you're giving me. And of course, there usually is something. Oh, well, the catch is you have to kill so-and-so, or you have to, you can't spend it all in one place or something like that.
You know, this use of catch, I mean, it's not totally dissimilar from catching a ball, but it makes me think of a nail that's sticking out of like a door frame or a wall.
That you catch your clothing on.
You catch your sweater on it as you go by, right? And then it kind of pulls the thread out so the sweater is no longer perfect. It's kind of pulled ugly.
Yes,
so it's a problem that you don't really notice. And then it's not even a problem for you until it's caught you.
Yeah, yeah, until it's
caught you. So it's sort of an unseen problem that then...
Yes, yes, very appropriate for our article.
It is a consequence.
Right. Yeah. And so the catch then, for, in terms of headless browsing, the rise of headless browsing and the whole dead internet theory, the catch is that when AI agents visit a website, the website has no way to tell, often has no way to tell that it is an AI agent and not a human being. And this is sort of where the whole article comes together for me in terms of the real-world implications
Peter,
computers talking to computers on the internet, because I was reading that at first and I thought, okay, that's kind of interesting, but what's the big deal? Well, Simon, as it goes on to say, what is the big deal here?
Well,
what is the real-world
impact? My first
impact?
Reaction to this is basically, like, why would it be a big deal? Because, I mean, even if the person is not checking all 20 websites to verify a fact, 20 websites are being checked on behalf of the person, right? So if you were to remove most of those websites, right, because you're like, oh, real people are not visiting the website. Well, real people are continuing to make use of the information that is presented on the website. So I, you know, for me, an agentic AI that clicks on a link, there's no real difference in terms of usage. Like, both that and the human clicking on the link are actions that are being taken on behalf of the human.
Mm-hmm.
So no problem. But they do present sort of a twist on that here, and I suppose that is the catch. Like, it's related to money, right?
Oh, it's always related to money sooner or later.
So, like I had mentioned, when I had put together e-learning systems in the past, I tend to do them as a service that was attached to a live class. Like, so for example, you upload course content to the Google Classroom for your class. But there are other things at play here. And I mean, this one is the A word, right? Advertising.
Advertising.
Yeah.
Yep. Pays the bills.
So there truly is a problem. It's just not a problem for everyone.
Right. And the problem, of course, is, just to spell it out here, is that if companies are relying on web advertising to pay the bills and they can no longer tell that their ads are being seen by human beings because human beings aren't accessing the websites as much, it's these AI agents who are accessing the websites on behalf of the human beings, but nevertheless, human eyes are less and less visiting the websites, seeing the ads, being moved by the ads to consider the product because the AI is doing it for them, the headless user interacting with the headless browser, then even if it isn't statistically happening as often as it might be, the idea that it could be is, as the article says, terrible news for companies. If advertisers, it says, could no longer trust whether a website knows precisely how many people are visiting it, they're not going to spend their limited ad dollars on that site. If it's, you know, if they hear more and more about, oh, well, it's all just computers talking to computers nowadays on the internet, well, then why should we spend money on advertising? And if you don't spend the money on advertising, the website can't get started. And there is a domino effect here to the idea of machines talking to machines.
So presumably this is largely affecting like content producers that are viewed as reliable sources of information. So the one, I mean, I'm thinking Wall Street Journal, New York Times here. I'm not thinking so much Wikipedia, which fundraises basically to support itself.
Yeah.
So businesses that are driven by advertising. But, you know, this is actually not the first complaint we have heard from these businesses. Like the last complaint I remember was ad blockers, you know, where people installed software that just blocked their ads from appearing.
Right.
And that, you know, what it sort of suggests to me, I'm not sure I feel very much compassion for these companies because people are repeatedly demonstrating that they do not want to see the ads, but the ads are being pushed on them. And so it's like, maybe we need a new model, like a new way of advertising, a new way of something that, and you sort of see that, like at the moment, there's a whole lot of, are you interested in this? Yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
You can click.
Mm.
And so advertising is being more and more tailored to individual interest.
Right, right. You know, advertising, yeah. In commerce and finance, advertising, I've come to think of kind of like taxes. It'll always be there because it is a useful way to fund something, to raise money for something. But it will always be disliked. It will always be despised even. And there will be measures developed to counter it and then measures to overcome those measures and then on and on and on.
I don't know that that's always true. Like, you've been to conferences and places like that where you get what we call trade magazines. So it's related to your industry or whatever. The vast majority of those free magazines, like the reason they're free is because all the content is actually advertising.
That's true.
It just doesn't look like little ads or pages of ads. It's written like articles, but it's, you know, it's written by the company that produces the thing to introduce and promote the product.
Right.
And so there is sort of a time and a place for that where people are happy to take the free magazine, happy to read through it, see if there's anything interesting.
Yes.
They just sort of do it with a different attitude than when the ads are being pushed at them.
Yes, yes. It's much to think about, but we are at the end of our time today. Just wrapping up, the last paragraph gives a good summary statement. If headless browsing does become the norm meaning the way things are normally done, the standard practice, it also means that the dead internet theory could take on an expanded meaning, no longer be just a fringe theory, as we talked about yesterday, known only to a minority of people and having only a minority effect on things. No longer would the phrase, the dead internet, signify only an internet where human beings do not make the majority of the content, but where the majority of the browsing, the majority of the viewing of that content, the interacting with that content, is also no longer done by human beings. Much to think about. We're thankful that you've been with us here these past 2 days. That's it for today. Join us next time when we will have a new topic to scratch your head about and think about and talk about and hopefully grow in your confidence in English. But for today, I'm Peter.
I'm Simon.
Saying bye-bye.
Goodbye.